spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait, designation, Forge the Narrative.
Hello and welcome everyone to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bella Bell Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Red Powell.
What up?
Tanya Gates and Adam Camilleri.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, g'day.
Welcome to the show. In this show, we're going to talk about Space Wolves. And in the middle of the show, at least on the podcast aggregators, I have an interview to insert with Jules German from Weta Workshop. I'm very excited. That's going to be coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so after we get done with this segment in between this. And if you're listening on YouTube, it might be in the middle of the show or it might be on its own thing. I'm going to release it. It's really cool. We talk about how they collaborated with Warhammer to produce some of the awesome things that they have on their website right now. Links will be down below in the show notes to check them out. And trust me, you want to check them out if you have not already. They're bringing that same passion that you know them for with Lord of the Rings to now some Warhammer stuff. And as someone who has seen them up close, they are things of beauty, but you get to hear more about that during that segment. We are a little late to the party with the Space Wolves. Space Wolves went up for pre-order and previewed by a lot of the other content creators last week. Sorry, we were a little bit late. We were doing a little bit of talking about Warhammer in Dallas.
Just a little bit of talking.
Just a few hours, drop in the ocean.
Look, it's a good chance. If you don't find us on the scheduled on the weeks we're supposed to deliver a show here, you might check out YouTube and Twitch if you want some live Warhammer 40,000 content, covering some stuff from the Warhammer Open series, which was absolutely awesome. Death Guard, the most numerous event there. Oh, sorry, numerous faction there.
Faction, yep.
I don't know if you still got the stats handy.
Absolutely do. You have put me on the spot, but I absolutely do. Just a moment to give me one moment.
I figured you might have it. Yeah.
It's likely, right? It is likely. It's the internet. I barely delete anything these days. I probably should. But yeah, the stats were very interesting for this event with 277 players attending to roll dice on the Friday with 8 rounds up for grabs. The top taken factions were, come on.
It's all red on camera a few times also. Together.
Oh yeah, was that so there was 21 in the background?
So it was 21 Death Guard. There was 20 Adeptus Astartes and Astra Militarum, 19 Eldari, 16 World Leaders and Empress Children, and 15 Necrons for the top 5 placed positions.
That's pretty good. That's a lot of Death Guard. Death Guard and made it to like the. I think there were 2 or 3 Death Guard in the top 8.
So the top bracket. So of course with the Warhammer Open after the format, after the 4th round, you'll be split out into a bracket of 32 players of your peers of a similar win path. And when it got broken down into that 32 for the undefeated bracket, there were 6 Death Guard in there. So there was quite a lot. And then from there, it went down to 3 after round 5. And then the top 4 did have a Death Guard in it. So the top 4 was 1 Eldari, 1 Astartes, 1 World Eaters, 1 Death Guard.
But I think with the amount, the number of Death Guard that were present. Like, there's a lot of people freaking out about Death Guard and that they were just going to rock this meta. But when I think that you look back at things, and I know you and Paul just came from your Meta Watchers, and no, I have not seen
Meta Chasers. Thank you for the plug. Hey. Whatever, Meta Chasers.
Hey. All right, I'm going to come up with a different name for it every week.
Member of the U.S. Bomby.
That's right.
So I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the other show that people should check out also, where we can hear some stats just like this from around the world.
That's right. But again, like, there are people at the event. Like, this is one of the first, like, I mean, the Death Guard and World Eaters just dropped, and there's people talking about nerfing Death Guard. Like, it needs to be nerfed. And honestly, there's a couple people I was like, I was just judging. So what does my opinion care? But as I look at it, I was like, so how long have you been playing this army? They're like, for 4 months. I was like, well, but these guys just dropped last week and you haven't changed anything. Nothing, like, you didn't adapt to it. So why are we expecting nerfs when the meta hasn't even adapted to the fact that they've been introduced?
You see, I'm of the opinion there's a couple of things that could go up in points. I don't think there's any rules that need to be changed. I do think Death Shroud are a little on the cheaper side, same as those blow drones with the heavy blight launchers. But it's not a throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of deal.
Yeah,
there is no skies falling. This is nowhere near as problematic as innumerable other things we've handled this edition, let alone previous.
They didn't win either. So we're
They didn't win in, there were several events, right? And they, I didn't, big events.
Yeah, they won one, I think.
One out of how many big events were going on with the amount
last
of
weekend,
people that were competing?
There was like five, you know, five 100 events, player right? plus.
Yeah.
Now, don't quote me on that, because I do think they made like the top three and top five quite a lot.
And the week people before, I think, too, there was a lot of wins.
People,
Death Guard too.
But you expect that, like when it's a brand new thing that is quite powerful into the meta, it's going to hit pretty hard. That wave is going to crest and hit pretty hard. But then the meta, you know, will adapt. But how do I adapt to Death Guard? Same as Custodes. What did you take when Custodes were the best thing? Very similar. There's a little bit of difference. You probably want to take more infiltrator like things and just block out those 6-inch deep strike charges from Death Shroud. But most of the time you want to just take, you know, heavy hitting stuff that will pick up, you know, big chassis, because outside of probably a single unit of Plague Marines, everything else is multi-wound, toughness 7 or more, either a tank or a Terminator. So pack those Melter guns in, get those things, you know, get those mortal wounds in as well. They're very susceptible to mortal wounds. A grenade is just as good as a multi-melter, as far as I'm concerned. Tank shocks, things of that ilk, devastating wounds. There's a lot people can do.
Yeah, a great call. I thought it was interesting to see that they were, you know, basically came out of the woodwork as far as like faction people playing the faction and being ready to go, and then how people adapted in and around it. I can echo on both sides of the table here about like, yes, you obviously, as the amount of stuff that we've had injected into the game should, when you're playing at the competitive level, should precipitate some changes to what you're taking to be able to adapt to the things that other people will be taking. You know, but then there are also some things that are probably a little aggressively statted and pointed and stuff. And so, you know, luckily the game takes a look at that kind of stuff and makes adjustments as, you know, almost like patches as time goes on. So, you know, hold tight, everybody. We're in for the same smooth ride we've been having so far. But let's talk about some more new stuff coming out, and that is the Space Wolves. The Space Wolves have gotten some, you know, a little bit of love. There's been some unit removals, which we can talk about. But there's also been some changes to existing characters and use and stuff. And I think is going to make some for a pretty... I was trying to come up with a cool wolf pun on the fly.
So,
you know, I was going to say that it has a lot of bite and just as much bark. That's where I was going.
I appreciate the effort.
I don't.
As a Dark Angels player who in recent years has lost like a whole draw of my army, has been put out to pasture for age and, you know, new models and stuff like that. I got to say, Space Wolves, they did Space Wolves better. Like they, for all the things that you lost, they gave a lot. And you don't feel that bad about some of the changes. Like, oh, people like when they saw it were like, oh no, Thunderwolf Cav untakeable now because there's no character support. And then even just half a week on, I have the same people being like, wow, 100 points for 3 Thunder Cav, that's broken. So yeah, it's fine.
Well, aren't like Thunder Cav, like they're kind of beefed up. Right. I mean, so they kind of make up for the fact that there's not a character potentially.
They get plus one, dude. They get plus one damage on the charge. Like they go to damage on the charge or for the rider.
So it's like a sweet number right now. That's a real good number for everything we just talked about, Custodes, Death Guard, or whatever. Yeah. Like
that... T6, 4 wounds available to have a 4-up invulnerable save, and they absolutely slam for 100 points, just as like a skirmishing unit to go and flip an objective that takes like a. Like, cool, you go and pick up 5 infiltrators or some orc boys or storm boys on an expansion objective. It took you that 100-point resource to go and take that, you know, possibly 100-point unit off the table. Easily done. It's going to cost them 200 to 300 points minimum to take your unit off. It's like an exponential, you know, the graph of damage to removal that they produce and then require to be removed is ridiculous. They're really quite powerful. And then also they did Wolfen really well. The points went up on Wolfen, but their abilities and the things that they can do in the game, they've done them very well. In fact, everything in this book I think is done reasonably well.
We're getting slightly ahead of ourselves, I think.
Ahead.
That's okay. Look, that's okay. I think there's, you know, jumping head first into this, you know, because Space Wolves is a chapter that people really identify with. Like, I know a lot of extremely dedicated Space Wolf players.
It's the orcs of the Astartes. We're all thinking it. Let's just say it. you have so many people who play a myriad of different Astartes, and then there's the Astartes players who only play Space Wolf. They're like, they won't countenance. There she is. She's up there. She's right there. She's like, the other Astartes make me sick. But Space Wolves, mwah, forever.
Well, let's talk about the Great Wolf and the High King, if we can, for a moment. And I'm referring to Logan Grimnar. Logan is a storied character, you know, basically been involved, you know, deep in the lore and a mainstay of Warhammer 40,000 for decades at this point, and has gone through yet another revision of model and scope. And I want to know what y'all think about it. So Logan Grimnar, the chariot, the sleigh is gone.
I feel like as the Space Wolf, I'm not a Space Wolf player, but the collector, and maybe this will be a bit controversial, but I thought that the sled was a little bit goofy. So I never got it. The urge to paint the noses on the wolves red was like really high. And I was like, you know what? I can't do it. So I never actually got Logan Grimnar, but I probably will pick up this version of Logan Grimnar. Also, the idea of moving that big chariot around the board. No, I'm good. Thanks.
So I have to rate and rank this Logan model versus its contemporaries, Asriel, Helbrecht. Are there any others? Dante. And this is the best one. I can't really. He's the. Paul, this is the rules
Paul
wise.
Let that
I
go.
Rules I wise, don't. I don't think he's the best one. But this miniature is in freaking incredible. Oh,
the stories on this guy's face.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're gonna let old grandpa.
Well, no. So you look at his face and you're like, this guy was at the first War of Armageddon. You can see the lines right there. See that line right there? First War of Armageddon. He saw what the Grey Knights did. He was like, oh. There's a line here, and you done crossed it.
As far as like best, what is essentially chapter master, look, he's got up there. He's not beating Dante. I completely agree. But the man, he is rocking a sick wolf pelt and comes with the bestest boys, you know, like.
So. Yeah, model for model, I think he is the best. As for rules, I think he's. I actually don't rate his rules that highly.
I feel like Adam's just stuck on comparing tactical rocks here. I think that's all he's about. It's just tactical rock for Adam. That's
he
all
does have about. The superior tactical. Well, Dante's got a little ledge. He's got a little footstool.
Right. Yeah.
Logan's on a plinth. He's on a tactical plinth.
So let's go with the. So Logan can lead some Wolfguard Terminon. More on that in a bit. High King of Fenris. Once per battle round in your movement phase, you can select one friendly Space Wolves unit that is in strategic reserves. If you do, until the end of the phase, for the purpose of setting up that unit on the battlefield, treat the current battle round number as being one higher than it actually is. And let's talk about that rule for a second. I think this is an amazing rule. Anything that lets you equates to breaking a core rule of the game, I think is spectacular if you find the right combo.
So my only question is, and Red, you might be able to do a little judge ruling on this. Can he use this on himself if he is off the board? Or does he have to be on the board to do this?
No, he doesn't have to be on the board to do this.
That's what I figured as well. So the case in point is, You're in reserve with Logan and a unit of Termies, and you just windmill slam them turn one. And I think that is pretty, pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to prepare for it, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah. And then they relocated what was Bjorn's ability, which was the 12-inch make the CP cost more. And now they've chucked it on Logan, which I actually am a fan of. I think it's a very, very strong ability, especially on a brawler unit like the Wolfguard Terminators and Logan will be, where people will want to rumble with them and spend CP to guarantee their death. And now you're going to make them, you know, tax them through the years for it.
Guile of the Wolf aura. Each time your opponent targets a unit from their army with a stratagem, if that unit is within 12 inches of this model, increase the cost of that usage of that stratagem by one CP. Mm.
So fight on deaths, you know, getting sustained or lethals or lance on the charge against this unit. Yeah.
Counteroffensive?
Yep, counteroffensive, absolutely. 100%. In addition, the Wolf Guard that, you know, he can only be accompanied by did get a bit of a glow up as well. So they feel a lot better too.
I just want to point out, do you have 3 CP on turn one?
Yeah.
I don't.
No. I don't. how do you guys, so more, I feel like more than any other Astartes chapter for the duration that I've of Space Wolves' existence. They have more or less been defined by their special characters, because they just seem to have more special characters than
it's all kind of archetypes in the background of, you know, the 13th Warrior or the sagas, and like, you know. You know, you were a bit of a pariah if you used a bunch of name characters in previous editions, unless you were playing Space Wolves, and then it was just like, cool, you know?
Yeah, it's just that's just what you do. And I do feel like that identity is going to remain, because their special characters are, you know, build arounds. I got to say, like, if Ragnar Blackmane isn't an auto take moving forward, my finger is not on the pulse.
Let me go get rid of, Logan's weapon rules. Is that the wolves that he comes with, extra attacks, more attacks from there, but then he also has a strike and a sweep profile, which is normally reserved for like monsters and giant things. But nope, here comes Logan with a sweep attack, 10 attacks, hits on 2, strength 6, neg 2, 1 damage, or strike attack, 6 attacks, strength 8, hitting on 2, neg 2, 3 damage, which we know is that like sweet number.
So this always gets me about Logan, and I forgive you if I'm wrong. You guys might be able to think back further than I can, but it's now confirmed that the best Stormbolter available to the Space Wolves is in fact just a regular Stormbolter, because their chapter master hasn't had anything better than the stock standard Stormbolter for as long as I can remember. That's the best they got in the Fang. Is just
he
like
he is also humble. He's a man of the people. Which is actually, I'm not even kidding. Yeah, that's one of like Logan's hallmarks. Isn't that the right in the first Battle of Armageddon? They wanted to go down and the Imperium wanted to go down and I think execute all the surviving Imperium people because they witnessed things at the Battle of Armageddon.
Logan saw
over my dead body, if I remember it.
And he lost. They did do that. Grey Knights and the Inquisition scourged that thing.
It's a cool story all around, but that's what you got to know a little bit about Logan.
What were you going to say, Red?
Oh, you know, I mean, you just got to maintain OPSEC. That's the thing.
But yeah, that is exactly, that's what I meant about the first war, the harrowing first war of Armageddon, where they technically won and still managed to lose because the Inquisition and the Grey Knights exterminatus the planet, killed all the population, killed it all back and started over because there was a Demon Primarch there. And
I do want to make a lore point that just real quick, that the Imperium has progressively moved forward, and due to the prevalence, you know, the whole like scar and everything that Abaddon was able to pull off, like it's in some parts, some places, it has stopped like wholesale, like, you know, lobotomizing everybody that comes in any contact with chaos because it's so much. That's been something that's brought up in the story as of recently.
It's been policy change, you say?
Yeah, there's been some policy changes due to like they essentially would be getting rid of too many people at that rate. So we're trying to control it. Just
let's talk about Ragnar, and then we'll take a break and do that interview with Mr. German, and then we'll come back and talk more about this stuff. But Ragnar Blackmane, movement 7, toughness. We need to talk about the fact of how fast all the Space Wolves are as well. So, and this is just built into their character sheet. Logan is a 6-inch moving Terminator. Ulrich the Slayer moves 7. Bjorn the Fellahand moves 9. You know, Ragnar 7. T4, 3+, 4+, invulnerable save. 5 wounds, 6+, leadership, 1 OC. And then Frostfang, sustained hits 1. 8 attacks, hits on 2, strength 6, neg 3 AP, 2 damage apiece. Has the War Howl ability. While this model is leading a Blood Call unit, each time a model in the unit makes a melee attack, you can reroll the wound roll. While this model is leading a Wolfguard Headtaker's unit, the unit is eligible to declare a charge in a turn in which it advanced. Another powerful ability there, Battle Lust. Each time this model ends a charge move until the end of the turn, add 2 to the attached characteristics of this model's Frostfang weapon. So swing in 10 attacks, sustain hits 1 with that.
Amazing. He is incredible. And naturally, it doesn't really matter which one you join him to, the new head takers or the blood claws. They're both very good. Of course, it just kind of depends which detachment you'd rather. I personally am a huge fan of the head takers. I think incredible unit.
I mean, advance and charge sounds real good. I mean, when you move 7, you move a little bit faster, and then you in some of these deployment zones that we've got, you can start.
So you're moving seven. Let's say you've got six head takers and Ragnar deploying three out of the impulsor that you maybe took. So then you're moving seven, you're moving 10 inches, then you get a 6-inch advance, you're moving 16 inches, then you charge 2d6 up to 28-inch threat range on this unit rocking out of the, of an impulsor. That is a unit that, if you want to know how head takers are, essentially they're like, they're very similar to Sword Brethren for Black Templars. They're quite similar in that if they touch you, you're dead. You're dead. If they get up, like, yeah. If they get in combat, you are smoked. There is no coming back. Pretty much, unless you're a Demon Primarch, you're absolutely dead. And that thing having a 28-inch threat range is fearsome.
You can move from cover to cover, essentially, with that.
Like, yeah.
What if you really want to roll a lot of dice, though? What's the maximum size unit of Blood Claws now?
20.
That's a lot of rerolls.
And they come with advance and charge stock. Like, that's why Ragnar doesn't give them advance of charge, because they already got it. But Ragnar giving them rerolls to wound is kind of wild as well, because they pack four attacks each. So you're going to go in with 80 attacks?
My little lady hands can't even hold that many dice.
There's only one reasonable thing to do, is to have a small bucket, you know, like a sandcastle building bucket.
Yeah.
And just scoop them in, and they're just like, ha ha, sandcastle. Sandcastle of dice. And then you just like smoosh it around. And there you go. That's how you do it.
That is so many attacks.
I will try that.
It's very good. It's a very buffable unit as well. And there is an attachment that fits that unit perfectly.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. This has been a cool character. It's always been very like fighty, super fighty. And this makes it even more fighty. It's probably the fightiest this has ever been. The ability to get into fights.
Yeah, he's never been as well rounded. He's had times where, you know, in 8th edition he fought almost as hard, but had, you know, had like access to 2 CP fights twice, so technically he fought harder, but he didn't have the logistical delivery system built into his same package, where now he's just well rounded. He gets himself into the combat and then he smacks when he gets there.
We're going to take a quick break, do the interview, then come back talking more about Space Wolves. We'll see you in just a minute, everybody.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special spotlight segment here on FTN. My name is Paul, of course. I'm joined by Jules German. Jules, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for having me.
So, Jules, you're from Weta Workshop. If people could not tell by this, the absolute spectacular thing surrounding you in frame right now. So it's a very much a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm going to talk to you about the Warhammer collaborations. I want to talk about you and your creative process. I want to know about the team behind this stuff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, thanks, Paul. It's Friday here in New Zealand, so we're almost at the weekend.
One more day, but thanks for carving out time for me. I really appreciate it. And we met each other at the finale for the World Championships of Warhammer. So it was back then as the Open Series in Atlanta, almost 2 years ago at this point, a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Where you unveiled the Captain Titus statue. When I say statue, like, I think that you can see a piece of it right there. Like, it's massive. And that was like the first burst onto the scene with some of this Warhammer stuff. And can you tell me a little bit about it?
Absolutely. So we got, once we'd established a relationship or a professional relationship with Games Workshop, and we had permission to render some of their characters around that time, so AOS or 40K, and we wanted to do 40K first. And then around that time, the Space Marine 2 video game was in the works. Games Workshop were kind enough to sort of put us in touch with Saber. So we had a little bit of a peek behind the scenes that perhaps some other people might not have had access to. And with the love and the sort of poster boy, the Ultramarines, man. We had the deep love of the Ultramarines from the community, and then the fact that we had Space Marine 2 coming out, it just seemed like an absolute no-brainer that Lieutenant Titus should be our first character.
Truly spectacular. Blew everyone away. The look on the faces of everyone they've seen it and people that have seen it since, you know, may only be surpassed by the statue on your other flank there. People could see creeping in just the enormity of these things with Abaddon the Despoiler,
yeah.
and And as someone who has also seen these things up close and personal, I can tell like the love and care that went into their design. Can you tell me, are y'all Warhammer fans as well?
Oh my God. Yes, of course. There's a huge amount of love and deep passion for Warhammer here at Weta Workshop. Myself, I got introduced to Warhammer when I was 10 years old. I mean, I still remember the moment. It was an undead army my friend had. It just blew my mind. And I've been hanging out with them ever since. Like, still to this day, if I get time, I paint or build Warhammer most days of my life. And then I'm surrounded by people here at the workshop that have a similar experience. So it's a very, very close-knit sort of relationship we have with this property. It was an incredibly exciting day when we got to tell people that we're actually allowed to make some of these characters and play in this sandbox.
I know we kind of talked about the origin of Titus, and you know, we've seen some other things like this in front of you here with the helmets, and that's actually an alternate Titus head that comes with the statue there in front of you. I think it's amazing that it's in also seemingly in the same scale as the other, as the helmets that you have available as well.
The helmets are technically unscaled. The statues are 1/6 scale, and then the helmets are unscaled. And we did that because we try and keep them so they look good together. But because of the huge size variation of characters within the Warhammer worlds, you know, between AOS and 40K, we wanted the helm collection that should people want to collect multiples of them, that there would be a unified cohesion across the range. So we try and scale them like a larger character's helmet will be larger than, say, a smaller character's helmet, like a dwarf. But the helmets are technically unscaled, whereas the statues are 1/6 scale.
The attention to detail just blew my mind as far as like also the aesthetics of it, which are, of course, very important. And, you know, again, we'll talk about the gloriousness of them and how cool they are. It's like when you're holding them in your hand, like these are things that would look great on your shelf next to your army, just as on your desk at work and stuff like that. But can you tell me about the design of them? Because, you know, they are, you're looking at the property of, you know, established, like people know what to expect when they look at it. How do you capture that and then kind of bring it to life in y'all's format?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a complicated, well, it's not complicated. It's a, we really pour ourselves into it and sort of tend to perhaps overthink this, if that's possible with what we do. So once we've decided on a character, and that's a exchange and a collaboration with Games Workshop, and we go back and forth on you know, what we'd like to represent and what they would like us to represent, then we just pour into research. And like, we have, because we're genuine fans of this, we have the models and we've been reading the books and we generally do know. But then when you really start digging into it, a whole lot of questions arise. Like, we try and make our stuff like it could exist, that this armor, these characters could actually function and walk and fight across a battlefield or do whatever they're doing. So we start ending up, well, we end up in minutiae, like how does a Space Marine's boot actually work? Like if his foot's going to pivot up because he's running, how do the plates interact with each other? Where do the rivets join? So it ends up being a really, like a study of functionality. And then because this is the really fun bit for me, I think, that because of the scale when these things are so large, we can go to town with the detail, like what the texture of the ceramite, if it's ceramite, how old is the metal on Abaddon's armor? So if it's, you know, it's 10,000 years old, what does that look like? And so we go as far down the rabbit hole as time and money will allow us to. And really, really pull it becomes a technical exercise. Like, what is this material? What's its function? What conditions, atmospheric conditions, has it been exposed to? So we try and bring to it is this could work. This Abaddon's armor, it could work. Abaddon is a real being. So we try and, that's our aesthetic, is trying to drag it into a feasible reality, a viable existence.
I love that. And you mentioned, you know, you mentioned the team and y'all and being fans. Is that something that's a common thread between the people that are working on this project? You know, were they fans of Warhammer before? And then how that impacts the product?
Oh, absolutely. Like there's a lot to say on that subject matter. Like we've got Daniel Cockesell, a sort of head sculptor. He actually used to work for Forge World. We've got Gary Hunt, another Englishman who, he's been sculpting minis for decades. Myself, Lena Dallas, all of us have been like fanboying out and fangirling out in some cases with Games Workshop, you know, literally for decades. And then when we got the permission and all the legalities were done so we could work, you know, I just literally went around all the departments in a company and said, we've got Games Workshop, we've got Warhammer. And the reaction was amazing. Like, it's immediately people started saying, we've got to do this faction, we've got to do this faction. I don't care what anyone else says, we have to do this faction. So the faction is real. And then what whenever possible here at Weta Workshop, we try and work on projects that the artists want to, because there is, like, I really do believe there is something, if someone's genuinely engaged and passionate about a project, there is something intangible that carries through to the finished product. I don't know, I've never known exactly what it is, but if there is a genuine passion and engagement with a subject matter, the end product is stronger.
I can feel that, and you can see that in the stuff that we've seen so far. Can you tell me, we just jumped into it, would you mind telling me a little bit about yourself, like how long you've been with Weta, what you were doing before, and what got you on this path?
Sure. I've always been creative. My mother used to joke I came into the world holding a crayon. And then I've been at Weta Workshop. I'm in my 11th year. I came here, I was actually a screen printer for a long time, you know, screen printing posters, t-shirts, all of that sort of stuff. I've always worked in the creative industries. When I came to Weta, I sort of bounced around departments for a bit. I was a model maker. Like, I've always been super keen on building models and, you know, particularly Warhammer, but really anything I could get my hands on. I ran the painting as the, if I'm on tools, I'm a painter. I ran the paint department for a while. And then I always loved the collectibles. And that sort of goes back to the model building aspect of me. And eventually a role sort of came up as creative director for our collectibles division. And I just threw my hat in the ring and argued very strongly it should be me.
Well, I mean, it seems like a particular set of like skills and passions all coming together into that, that fit.
Like, it sounds a bit cheesy, but I do feel blessed. I feel like I ended up where I really wanted to end up or wanted to be.
Oh, but no. I mean, that's great. Not everyone can say that. And then being able to work on these different things, how do you, I guess, do you in your mind compartmentalize like the different genres or fandoms and stuff, or is there compartmentalized, or, you know, like, how do you make such great things in different areas?
That's a really good question. They do get compartmentalized, but maybe not in the way you'd think. Like the when we start a thing, so that it has to come, I think, from love and knowledge and engagement. But what isn't, so the creative process is pretty similar, and the mechanical process of sculpting, molding, casting, painting, that's pretty similar. What does change and is different is the fandoms are quite different. Like the Lord of the Rings fans, you know, we've been in that space for a long time, are quite different from other fan groups. And like Warhammer fandoms, which they're quite different too. Like one group of people might be a lot more orthodox, and so the lore is very, very important. And so you have to almost, like Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth, it's a history for that group. Like it's a pseudo history. So you have to be respectful of that, and the lore is important. I'm trying to find my words. So it's like it actually happened. So you can't change what happened.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Whereas Warhammer is a bit more fluid, because that law, it's sort of been invented as it goes along, and some of the connecting threads are maybe a bit more tenuous or vague. So the attention to detail with Warhammer is a different sort of, the focus is slightly different than it might be with Middle-earth. And then other fandoms, they just have their unique qualities. And because we're doing it, you know, if the fans don't respond, then we've failed our job. Like, if we're not elevating or hopefully elevating characters or these worlds, then we've failed. So really, the compartmentalization is just trying to be aware of what people expect and what they want. And obviously, we'd like to challenge that in some places, like maybe raise the bar, if that's possible. But yeah, they are different. It's quite interesting, actually.
So you get in there, if I can paraphrase slightly, is like you get in there and live in whatever that property is, and also consider what the people that experience that property are wanting and what they expect.
Yeah, I think it's a massive privilege to get to do what we do. Like, I think there's stories, like, on one hand you can say it's make believe and it's nonsense, but I think that the myths and the legends are, I think that's a really vital part of humanity. I think they're really important. Like, their morality tales, they're way more than just escapism for us. So it's a privilege to get to play in these areas. So I think you do have to live it. You have to throw yourself in and immerse yourself in this stuff. Because I feel like if you didn't do that, you're not worthy to have a crack at it. It can't be a casual interaction. It has to be an extreme one.
I love that respect. This is basically what I'm hearing from you, is the ultimate respect for what you're doing and what the fans want, and then also what the property intends and how you know, it is. Like, that's really nice to hear. You did talk briefly about the process of the design, the origin, the research, the work, and you know, I'm sure I'm leaving out several steps, but can you tell me about, like, the life cycle of an idea, of where it be, you know, does it jump from the paper to the thing you can hold in your hand, and what happens in between?
All right, so everything starts with a conversation with, I'll keep it to Warhammer. So Games Workshop and Weta Workshop, we have regular catch-ups and meetings. There's a constant barrage of emails going back and forth where we'll decide a character, and there's different ways to approach that. Like there's, so everyone's got their favorite faction, right? Like, I love Nurgle, and the Chaos factions for me are great. Other people love Tau, some people love Space Marines or the Orcs.
I love those debates between players and just people that love the lore. Like, you can have like a really crazy spirited debates, and I love that about this game.
Oh, it's so much fun, man. Like, I love it, you know. So once we've got a character, we'll start to the design process, and because they exist, like, a lot of that work's been done. We'll even scan Games Workshop or Warhammer models, you know, because then, like, even though they're small and the detail is perfect for the little ones, but when we blow it up, we have to introduce stuff. But we can get proportions, anatomy, you know, that there's so much great information in the minis. We'll scan them, blow them up, and pose it and put it in an environment. So with Abaddon, we chose a pose. This one was, like, really based on a really well-known famous painting of Abaddon. We'll flick either a 2D concept, like a digital painting, to Games Workshop, and at these early stages, we're kind of just asking for pose and environment. So with Abaddon, like, can we have him with the sword held aloft in a snowy environment? With Titus, can we have him, you know, stomping on a Tyranid in a, like, similar to the environment we saw in the first Space Marine 2 trailer of, like, a ruined Imperial city? Then once they've given a tick for that, we go into detailing. All of the Warhammer sculpts, with the exception of Scragrot, have been digital sculpts. And so we'll just start sculpting, and we send Games Workshop, you know, if we finish a pauldron or a glove, we'll just send that to them and go, does this look okay? Then eventually we'll assemble it. And we just go through a series of approvals. Then once we've got them, we'll 3D print them. Then we'll clean up the 3D prints. Then we make molds and we cast them. Then once we've cast them, we'll paint them. With paint, we go through a new series of approvals. With Warhammer, it's quite easier than some other properties because of the Citadel paint range. Like, all the colors, they're already there. And I get asked this, like, when I meet you at conventions and events, people ask if we use Citadel paints, and we do. For the Warhammer stuff, we do. So the colors are the colors.
Oh, that's awesome. So up to this point, what is the timeline? Like, what is how long does it take for each phase of this? And I know it may be different lengths of time depending on the subject matter, but an average amount.
Generally speaking, it's 1 year from concept to a product being able to be purchased.
Got it. I know it's a ton of work. And how large is the team? Like, how many people are doing this?
Far out. So that varies. I have 12 sculptors on my team. The paint team is 6 people. The mold and casting team are about 7 people. We have a cleanup team. It's sort of a small army or a battalion at least to do this. Then there's production managers. There's a legal aspect to it, just making sure that, you know, everyone's obeying the rules of various contracts. So all
licensing
in all,
is licensing. It's a
yeah, licensing, right? It's probably 50 people all up. Now, not all 50 of those people might directly touch each project, but there'd be around 50 people to keep this boat in the right direction.
That's so cool. I mean, y'all are truly producing, you know, like heirloom quality things. You know, as someone, again, I can't say it enough, I've been able to physically behold these things, and everywhere you look, every time you look, you can see something new and different on the model or on the statue. And
we try.
Yeah, it's super, super intentional and deliberate. And it seems like a lot of love goes into this. And that's coming out in what you're saying as well.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not, we don't do this lightly. It is a serious undertaking to us. And that we wouldn't do it if we didn't believe in it. And that might sound a little pretentious, but it is true. You know, like, we do really love this, and we want other people to love it as well.
That's so really great to hear. And I think, you know, I do think it comes out, and even talking with you over these last, you know, interactions at the conventions and stuff, the opens and every place. So I can feel that. And now also, you know, you mentioned that you are a Warhammer player. And so what are some projects, you know, you say you paint a lot and model a lot. What are some of the things that you're working on right now, Warhammer related?
Oh, my big one is Armies on Parade. I've never entered. I do many of the month. Every month, my daughter and I do many of the month. Like, I'm a super regular at my local store, but I've never entered Armies on Parade due to time, you know, discipline, all of the things. I'm assembling in my I have an AOS Nurgle army. It's heavily converted. I'd have, you know, probably multiples of every Nurgle model, I would think, at this stage. There can't really be many I don't have. And I'm building it's 2.5 feet tall at this point, a Nurgle army sort of coming through a portal down a spiral staircase to ravage an old, what are the Stormcast cities called? That sort of landscape anyway, the sort of Stormcast, an old Stormcast fort.
That sounds pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's getting, as soon as I like finally said, I'll do it, I'll enter Armies on Parade, that it became more and more ambitious as I went along. And so it's getting bigger.
I will say, though, it's kind of nice to hear that even the super creative types struggle with us, the same things us mere mortals do, which is the time and the motivation to get it done and to even start. But you've started, are you going to get it done? And what's your deadline?
It was going to be this year. This is going to sound terrible. I don't think I'll get it done for this year. It'll certainly be done for next year, though. I keep getting, because many of the month will take me, I try really hard with my painting. I'm pretty slow, man. but I don't want to stop many of the month because it's a great, you know, it's a great interaction with my local community. And my daughter is starting to get really into it too. So
that's fine.
It's just divvying up the time. But yeah, generally speaking, if I do get spare time, for me, it's Warhammer, you know, I love it.
I'll ask you this, and maybe we can connect again in the future as you get further along with this Armies on Parade project, but do you have like a big centerpiece or something? Like, not to spoil anything.
I've got a great unclean one at the very top, and then he's surrounded by Nurglings that are kind of having a dance party. I've converted some of the Nurgle. You know, some of the plague bearers are playing flutes. So I've got the centerpiece is the great unclean one, which I've really heavily converted. He's got a massive bell of Nurgle. I made his horns way, way longer and taller, and there's a big bell swinging between them, which is driving him mad. And then he's surrounded by Nurglings that are all dancing on top of a portal, which I one of the older models. I had to scourge the second-hand market. Like I've bought a lot of terrain from, you know, the Warhammer stuff that they don't make as much of it now, or some of the older kits that aren't around anymore. I've managed to find them. So the centerpiece is the great unclean one, and then down below, as you go down the staircase, there's a small township or a city. There's a lot of buildings and terrain in my piece, so it's pretty busy.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Well, Jules, thanks a lot for coming on and sharing some of stuff, information about yourself, the creative process, and, you know, just the relationship, you know, between Wet End Games Workshop. I really appreciate the time. Hopefully we can connect again in the future and learn more, as you know, especially as we, you know, we get to see more of the things as they come out. I'm really looking forward to it.
I promise you guys, there's a lot more stuff coming, which I can't talk about.
I will not press you, will not twist your arm, but I am excited to see it. Well, Jules, have a great rest of your day, and have a great weekend, and we'll talk again real soon.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
We are back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that segment, if you were listening to it on a place where that was inserted in there, or I hope you found it and then came back to this, because it's awesome, and I'm hoping that is a first in a series. Please check them out. You will not regret just beholding that stuff. Back to talking about Space Wolves. So, Adam, I think you were talking about like build around characters, and we weren't just talking about name characters in that segment. What was on your mind?
There is a... When I said their characters are good, there kind of isn't a bad character, named or unnamed. You kind of can't go wrong. If you're going infantry heavy, the Wolf Priests are superb, giving your units +1 to wound and regenerating a bodyguard model. It's fabulous, so powerful when attached to head takers, blood claws, whatever the hell you... But the Iron Priest is the one that I think adds a whole new dimension. With just one character, they're unlocking the playability of stuff like more armored side of things. Or what do they call it? The company? What's the company, the great company of the Space Wolves that's all about the tanks? Whatever. That one. They're unlocking it just with the Iron Priest, just with the...
Big dogs.
I'm sure it's those ones. Steel and wolf flavored.
the Iron Priest comes with what you'd expect from a Tech Marine. Still somehow movement 7 with a 2-up armor save and 4 wounds. He's got Hellfrost Pistol. It's fine. It's essentially a +1 damage, but a little bit less strength plasma pistol, but has a torrent option as well, which is just a AP 1 flame, which is really cute. In combat, it's got 4 attacks, but only hits on 4s, but it is strength 8, AP 2, 3 damage. Now, it does get lone operative like all the Tech Marines, once within 3 of a vehicle. Now, this is where it gets spicy. A lot of other Tech Marines will give you a bonus in addition to repairing a vehicle. This one gives rapid fire 1 in addition to repairing a vehicle. Now, this is
in your command phase, so like 1 friendly Adeptus Astartes vehicle within 3 inches of this model. That model regains D3 lost wounds and until the Astartes next command phase, range weapons equipped by that model have rapid fire 1.
Now, there are some tanks in the game, some vehicles in the game that get exponential benefit from it might not be the best tank to use this on, but it is the one that percentile unarguably gets the most out of this. And that's the Predator Annihilator. So Predator Annihilator has 1 twin link las cannon shot and then can have 2 las cannon shots from its sponsor. It will go from 3 las cannon shots to 6 las cannon shots within half range, which I think is 36 inches, which is most of the table when you move 10 inches.
The las cannon is 48. So
sorry, 24 inches.
24 inches, yeah.
Sorry, it was near 36 when you move your 10. But yeah, it goes from 3 las cannon shots to 6 las cannon shots. In addition, the Hunter Killer just gets 2 shots. You get 2 Hunter Killer missiles on your chassis. So you're going from having 4 anti-tank shots in one turn of the game, being the 3 las cannons plus the Hunter Killer, to just having 8.
I think you're forgetting the Humble Rhino.
The Rhino is up there too. Like, there's kind of nowhere this is a bad option.
Firing decks, right? You have whatever you want inside.
Correct. You kind of get rapid fire on the firing deck as well, or the impulsor, you know, should doing the drive-bys with things like Hellblasters. There is a lot of places. Naturally, the more gun you can slap this rule onto, the more better, like a Repulsor Executioner or something of that ilk. But, like, to just understand how good it is, the best example is that Predator Annihilator, which just is the value of two Predator Annihilators at 24 inches. It's like, that's, I have one Predator Annihilator. I put rapid fire on it at 24 inches. It is, in fact, two Predator Annihilators. It's kind of wild.
That you might, I mean, you can build around this character, so you're going to want to include things that maximize it, right?
Yeah, correct. And this guy's fantastic. I mean, you can make an archetype where you take three of this guy and take, you know, 3 to 4 premium tanks. And then this is just a phenomenal, you know, force multiplier. But the thing is, because it's only good for once per turn, so one tank per turn, you kind of don't want that much over redundancy. You kind of want like 4 to 5 good tank, high quality. And the other thing is the fact that you can put this on a model, and that model can be like a land speeder, could be like a storm speeder, Thunderstrike or hammer strike, and then just send it off, you know, is also another option as well. You can just strap it on.
Because it nominates it in the command phase, and then it gets its own phase to go off and do whatever it wants to do. Yeah, yep. good point.
So you actually just send it on in to do the damage, and just, it'll just get more shots. It's a fantastic, fantastic.
Again, for something that has been, you might want to include anyway, and now make your stuff even better. That's really nice. Arjak. Also very, very popular character. Still good in here. The range can still throw the hammer. Gets 5 attack strength 8, -2 AP 3 damage. Again, that's in that 3 damage sweet spot, so I wanted to highlight that. There's this very aggressive, but probably where folks want to hear about it is Bjorn the Fellhanded.
Yeah, so I do have one thing to say about Arjak. Oh. Why did they let Arjak be better in combat than Logan?
He's kind of, hasn't he always kind of been like more like real punchy?
Yeah, I mean, that is his whole shtick. He's like, I am hammer guy. My whole identity is this hammer. This is all
I can throw.
I
can hit you with it. You're not getting away from this hammer. That's
it's all I have in the world. It's me and this hammer.
Yeah, but they gave the hammer precision, which is, did it have that before?
I believe it had precision before, but it didn't have anti-monster, anti-vehicle 3+.
I mean, yeah, he just, oof. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has always been hard as nails, no pun intended. It's true. And able to just smack things down.
I feel like he drops an armager.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Rips it apart. Hitting on twos, winning on threes. Yeah. You wanted to tell us about Bjorn though, Red. You were pretty high on the
oldest. I mean,
so technically the oldest character of the loyalist variety in all of 40K.
The oldest.
You don't count Gilliman.
As a playable model in 40K, yeah. Right?
Oh, you can't count the Primarchs. They were asleep for most of it.
I mean, is Bjorn older than the Primarchs? Isn't he older than
them? Ooh, he was in the Great Crusade. I don't know if he was around before the Primarchs rocked up, but it's debatable. He's debatably the oldest.
Look, somebody get in the comments. Let us know if we're how far off we are on this.
Well, and we start getting into a weird discussion when you talk about if Bjorn's actually like still kicking, you know, in the regard of that he's a dreadnought.
Is he alive? Yeah.
Yeah. There's different discussions here we could have here anyways, but on to old Bjorn, the Fellhanded, which I do appreciate that they've, you know, stuck to the same approach, the model, and they haven't I guess they could have done more with it, but I like the kind of the classic approach they've got. In that he still has he hasn't drastically changed. He still has his assault cannon, heavy flamer, the true claw, but legendary tenacity. Each time an attack targets this model, if the strength characteristic for that attack is greater than his toughness, subtract 1 from the wound roll. So he's hanging in there. He's pretty tough. But this next part, you know, he used to have the Vect aura, right?
Yep, which they gave to Logan. Now, yeah.
They gave it to Logan, but now at the start of your command phase, if this model is on the battlefield, you gain 1 CP. Like, I don't know why you don't just have this dude rocking around giving you CP all the time. He's like the anti-cypher, and he comes, I mean, the true claw is no joke at 6 attacks, hitting on 2, strength 12, AP 2, D, so much 3 damage in this army, and this guy's just, and he's not even like, I want to say he's right in a weird spot as far as threat priority goes, because the weapon is good. I mean, assault cannon, Melta, Hellfrost cannon, whatever you want to put on there, you can actually change out his assault cannon for either the Hellfrost cannon or the multi-Melta, because he's got a classic dreadnought arm. But outside of that, like, is he something that you'd think, Adam, when you're looking at the field of all the stuff, okay, I've got to get rid of him first? Because I feel
his
like
little dreadnought.
Yeah, he's just a battery. And are you going to waste the time with the subtracting one from the wound roll?
Yeah.
I feel like a 5 plus feel no pain, right? He's got to feel no pain.
Well, exactly right. Does, well, greater to that, so Murderfangs is the same as well. Their movement 9 box north, which is very fast for the non-redemptor chassis. In addition, 2 up armor save. So he's got a 2 up armor save with an invuln and a 5 plus feel no pain, -1 to wound. -1 to wound. This guy is very hard to remove. And the fact that unlike like a Redemptor, this guy hides behind walls so much more effectively. I think Bjorn is fantastic. And yeah, you're right. When are you going to take the time to kill Bjorn? Like when are you going to have the bandwidth to put the resources in to kill this guy? Because he is harder to, he's dead set.
Yeah, it might not be a one turn situation.
Yeah. I mean, so there's only one thing I will say. He would, so there is no armor contempt access within the detachment for Space Wolves. That would be the last little cherry on top. You can, of course, play Space Wolves in a Gladius Task Force or any of those other ones, but in the Space Wolves specific ones, which I feel like is what Space Wolf players are going to gravitate to first, obviously, he is not quite as durable as some others. But the stratagems in the Space Wolves detachments are absolutely gas. They're absolutely amazing. I feel like he is bordering on auto-take. I think he's super. So I'm right there with you.
That ability you talked about with the command point does like put it on the what? Ask yourself why aren't you taking this unit?
Yeah,
you know, and then there's more stuff to it than that. So it's just like I think you're exactly right. It leans towards like you got to have a real good reason not to take.
So there's a game. There's a psychological game theory thing going on here with these characters that give you plus an extra command point. Asriel, Marnis, Kalgar, various other ones that just give you one start of your turn, because a lot of people want to keep that same effect going by cycling secondary card. Like, do I want to go and try and reach high and take a big risk to score this secondary card, or do I just play it safe and get a CP instead? When you're gaining that CP, you get to kind of like just dream a little bit bigger in the game, and the ability to be more free to work a little harder for your points and take some more risks without the point of it blowing out later when you don't score it and then don't get the CP. So I always feel like there's a double down effect of having these things in your army that makes you play that frees you up to play the game more proactively, because you're not in a sunk cost fallacy of being like, well, I shouldn't try to get that established locus because then I'll lose a unit, when instead for not losing a resource, I can get a CP. Where instead, you could just be thinking that I always have the CP. How do I maximize?
Turning those turns into more reliable points seems like a real good use of that one free CP. And that is something that I think everyone would like. I mean, how many times have you flipped a card that is like, I know my opponent satisfies the prerequisite of this card being live, but it's so unreachable right now. I really would like to do that. But if I do that, I can't counteroffensive, or I can't, this turn or whatever. Or next
I'm a stone cold cycling card maniac. A GT I played a couple of weeks ago, I cycled 3 out of 5 turns, I think, just about every game. Just about, I think with the exception of one game, I cycled 3 or more times every game. I won that event, by the way. I won that 6 round 90 player GT. Backfire, hey, woohoo!
I just wanted to know. I just wanted to, test the theory there.
I was playing Imperial Knights, and anytime I pulled a card that required me to give up a Knight's activation in order to get points, skipped it. Straight up skipped it. And because of that, I worked my way towards very good scoring cards for doing what I already wanted very quickly, and it worked out a treat.
That's nice. But yeah, these Space Wolves, I mean, they're again known for the characters and relying on characters and the unique abilities of the characters. I love how the book is themed around the sagas as well. That's something that came. What edition did the sagas come into it as like a big heavy thing?
I think it was 8th edition.
I'm thinking it was sooner than that. I could be wrong.
Didn't it used to be the sagas was like your... No, you're right, because the sagas were
Saga
like
the Bear, Bear Lords, and that kind of stuff. I mean,
it might have been like 5th edition then.
10, 11 years ago or whatever, at the very least.
I hate to tell you, 10 years ago was like eighth edition.
What? Hey, maybe so.
It was 8 years ago. It was eighth edition.
You know, at least, but it's at least that long ago. But I feel like it's been there. But I like how this is weaved in that saga concept to, you know, these them telling their own story and, you know, almost like reverberating back into itself this uniqueness, and then that's not lost on even the non-name character. So there's still room for, you know, life to be breathed into it by the players. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like it's all there.
I have a question for you guys. So if you had to pick one unit from the Space Marine Codex for somebody to bring into their purely Space Wolf army, what would you pick right now?
That's actually a really good question. So they've got pretty good utility units covered, because when you take head takers, you get Fenrisian Wolves, or you can just take Fenrisian Wolves. They're very good. They get OC within range of characters, so they can do all the actions and things like that, move blocking, etc. So I would kind of want some, and they've got really, oh man, they've got really good melee.
I mean, it's got to be
anti-tank. I want anti-tank.
Man, you got Arjak. What else do you need for anti-tank?
I want something that's going to pop a transport reliably from range. So, yeah, Gladiator Lancer might be mine, or Eradicators, depending on how close and personal you want to get. That's a great question, Tanya.
Anybody else want to weigh in?
Yeah, I'm thinking like the Infiltrators. You know, like to try to control the momentum of the game.
Well, and you did lose the specialty unit. Was it the
Hounds of Morkai?
Hounds of Morkai. So you could just call them some sort of infiltrating unit. Away you go.
Yeah, everyone, pour one out for the Hounds of Morkai. We hardly knew thee. In fact, we didn't. I'd never knew ya.
But maybe you'll see them on the board now as counts as for something else.
Yeah, he's just playing as Reavers, right? Like that. Yeah. Reavers are very good still.
Yeah.
Red, what do you think?
No, I mean, it's, you know, my go-to in any Space Marine aspect, and I think we've kind of talked about it before, but I think infiltrating is such a big part of board control and the game at large right now that I agree with the Infiltrators as just being kind of a fallback unit there. Outside of that, I mean, you know, we talk about the Iron Priests, and you mentioned the vehicles that you could have. There's a pretty good selection of vehicles out there that.
The Godhammer Land Raider is not a bad choice.
Yeah, no, it's not. Between the Land Raider, between the Repulsor, right? I mean, there's a lot of things out there that this thing can just, that the Iron Priest could suddenly pair into vehicle-wise that's going to take it to a very interesting jump. I mean, the Land Raider in, you know, from my review and experience with just recently with World Eaters, putting rapid fire on anything, even if you're hitting at a worse ballistic skill, which in this case they won't be, is still pretty nice.
Actually am changing my vote because I think you guys are correct. And I think I just went through all the units in all the spatial specific units. There isn't a single instance of scout or infiltrate. There are ways to do it with enhancements to get some scout and infiltrate into your army. But the fact that they don't have a single thing on a data sheet, I 100% agree with you. I think you have to take an infiltrating unit, be that scouts or infiltrators, whatever that may be. So I'm changing my vote.
All right. Let me write this down.
Yes. Yeah, like, I didn't expect
this
to
order in. Consensus. Yeah. Well, it's actually a bit freeing for him now that they, I mean, I do lament the loss of Long Fangs because that was it was a part of their identity that rather
That's a weird one for me because for the longest time, it's been almost that kind of like bit of dichotomy in the Space Wolves. Like, yeah, they are very good, but they've also got this whole thing to where like they're seasoned in their instincts and they're basically their gene seed also allowed them to do this one thing that no one else could do.
Well, I'm going to swear a little bit. They're ass backwards in the way that they roll within their chapter structure. As in, usually you kind of age into the chapter via the scout companies. And in Space Wolves, you age out in the scout company. And so the scouts are the most venerable members of the chapter. Whereas now it's flipped. Now you're back to having regular scouts.
But the Longfang special rule basically became a basic rule of the game. I mean, I have no insight as to what some of the decisions were made, you know, with some of this stuff, but
do you know what it is? It's as simple as they made a new scout kit and they couldn't then tell people to play with the new scout kit because it's on a different bait size, different model size.
No, I'm talking about the Long Fangs. The Long Fang special ability was that you could split fire.
Yeah, that's true. That's the only place I feel like I saw that for the longest time.
It was. No, that was it. Like, you could take, like, you were, it wasn't embarrassing to take two heavy bolters and two last cannons in your dev squad. That was,
yeah, well, yeah, you didn't feel like
because
you, yeah,
these could fire, you know, at the Termagants, and these could fire at the Carnifex, and that Longfang sergeant battle leader or whatever made him be able to split fire, and then that became a rule of the game. So maybe there was no need for the Longfang concept anymore.
I will say that the majority of things that left, with the exception of some characters and whatnot, it is all things that have somewhat of an equivalent in the Space Marine Codex, right? So, I mean, you just have, instead of having Sky Claws, you've got something with a jetpack in the other book that you can basically say, well, I'm going to use this. Yeah. As that, because it's wolfy, right? Which I think is actually good, because you can still end up using your collection. You know, you might have to change, I don't know, base sizes, or give them tactical rocks or something to make them, you know, primary size. No. But you can still use your collection, and I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
And you spread the bits around. You know, the Space Wolf bits, you know, there's always cool. Like, always cool.
If someone rocked up with a couple of units of five Sky Claws and said they were jump back intercessors, and they were like OG, beautifully painted, like old assault marines converted up, I am not going to have one critical thing to say. I'll be like, you are correct. They are jump back intercessors.
That already exists with like Death Company, because the Death Company Marines is not, it's not Primaris Death Company. There's Death Company.
Death Company.
It's correct. Okay if you rolled in with smaller models.
Or, you know, Vanguard veterans are still an option as well with jump packs. Yeah, I like that.
There was another, I mean, strangely enough, a character model to talk about, right? Before we wrap this up, didn't you want to talk about the Rune Priest?
Yes. So the Rune Priest is fantastic. And
Wolf Priest. Sorry, I don't know which priest you want.
Yeah.
Wolf Priest.
There's a lot of priests. That's what they do with their psychers. They just call them priests because they're a bunch of hypocrites.
What psychers?
Exactly right. Just like there's no wolves on Fenris.
I had to correct the Rune Priest comment. I'm like, back to Wolf Priest.
Yeah. So the Wolf Priest is like a chaplain and an apothecary came together. And I got to say, I'm jealous. This is quite good. They come with an Absolver Bolt pistol, just like a Chappie would, and a Crozius Arcanum, just like a Chappie would. Whilst this model is leading, so this is the Healing Balms. Whilst this model is leading a unit, in your command phase, you can turn one destroyed model, excluding character models, to that unit. And then in addition, they have the Litany of Hate. So they give the unit that they're leading plus one to wound in melee. So this is the brand new Harmacist, as I would like to call it, which is what we used to call the apothecary biologists that would attach to eradicators and somehow make them shoot better, even though it's an apothecary.
Aggressors.
It's exactly right. Yeah. Either or other. And the Wolf Priest is absolutely doing harm and bringing guys back to life. And I think he's...
No, that seems pretty good. I mean, you can't... There seems to be lots of cool things that like, oh, I can try this or I can try that. You know, then it comes down to your detachment choice.
Yeah, spot on. Just for example, though, Wolfguard Headtakers. The only downside of Wolfguard Headtakers is the fact that they attack at strength 5. So they have a slew, possibly up to 6 attacks, depending on the kit that you decide to take them with. 6 attacks at strength 5, AP 2, 2 damage. Plus 1 to wound is everything that they need. So a Wolf Priest with them and then resurrecting models per turn is actually also a huge deal as well when they come, you know, in unit 6.
I hope the Space Wolf players enjoy it. I think it's going to be tough. Anytime your collection gets, you know, potentially to where some of your models cycle out because the planes are also not part of the decks anymore.
Yeah, pull one out for the planes. I couldn't tell you what they're called, but I could have a red hot guess that they had Wolf and Storm and Fang or something in it.
I don't know anyone who actively played with them or used them. Like, I just haven't seen them, you know, on the tabletop in a long time, but I still know that that was something that people got sometimes, you know, so definitely want to sympathize with that.
I mean, the Cestus Assault Ram, you saw it in Horus Heresy. It was this cool kind of translation from that era to what the Space Wolves maintained. And so, yeah, it's kind of sad to see it go. But I'll be honest, if you told me that I had a unit that I could run with 20 models in it, like Blood Claws, I may not, you know, my attention span may not hold on to those planes as
I love
60 to 80 Blood Claws.
I love you, Red. You're just a simple man. You have a few things that you want in life. One of them starts with 20, ends with punchy, and that's it. It's like, can I have a unit of 20 punchy lads, please? Yes,
all you want.
All I want. My life is complete.
All he wants is chain swords, and bolt pistols. That's all he needs.
20 of
some fashion, some chain weaponry, some pistols, some charging,
and tanks with shovels on the front of them that can blow stuff up.
All
shovel tanks.
We're gonna have
a lot
to
of shovel tanks.
We need to start doing some parody videos for FTN where it's you impersonating Dr. Evil, and it's the lasers on their head, sharks with the lasers on their head.
But can I get some friggin' tanks? Can I get some friggin' tanks with friggin' lasers?
With some friggin' shovels on their freaking heads. All right, that's all I want.
Well, I do hope the Spaceball players are going to enjoy this, and I think they will. It's any kind of a change, but you know, you get the three detachments that open up stuff. You got, you know, you do still oath the moment. You got access to anything you want in the which I think is just going to blow the doors off of some of these characters and their spiking of damage and stuff. And then it remains to be seen what the rule breaking stuff that this army can do. You know, with the coming in a turn earlier. You know, the advancing and charging, you know, and those types of things. It's, I think it's gonna result in some fun games. It's gonna cause people to adjust how they play against them.
Do you want Adam's one play to watch out for?
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, all right. You have 10 Wolfen. You have a character because you are taking the Saga of the Beast Slayer as your detachment, which lets you take a Space Wolf character and attach them to Wolfen and also get +2 moves. So they'll move 9 inches, the same as the Wolfen. Now, this is a two stratagem combo. So let's say you've gone first, you've rocketed this unit into a staging area, then turn two straight for the jugular into your opponent's.
I mean, you've got Bjorn, so you have an extra CP anyway.
That's right. So this is a two strat combo of anti-shooting shutdown technology. So 10 Wolfen, they're inside your opponent's army, they're in their DZ, they're messing stuff up. Of course, they need to fall back and shoot these guys. First up, 1 CP, Thunderous Pursuit. In your opponent's movement phase, just after an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fallback move, 1 Adeptus Astartes unit from your army that is within 9 of an enemy unit and not within engagement range of 1 or more enemy units. It can make a normal move up to D6 unless you are Space Wolf Infantry or Thunder Wolf Cavalry unit, in which case it moves 6. So you've charged your Wolfen into their army, you've killed something, and then you've tagged something else. When that one unit falls back, you spend a CP and you move with them, but stay outside. You have to stay outside engagement range. Then, so you're 1 inch away from this unit that's falling back from you. Could be a Lehman Russ, Rogue or Dawn, doesn't matter. 10 guardsmen. You have another 1 CP strat called Impetuosity, which is your opponent's shooting phase, just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. 1 Wolfen Infantry or Blood Claws unit from your army that was selected as a target of 1 or more of those attacks. Until the end of the phase, after that enemy unit has shot, if 1 or more models in your unit were destroyed as a result of those attacks, your unit can make an impetuous move. To do so, roll 1d6. You can be moved another inches. This is a surge move, essentially. You can be moved another inches equal to it, as closest to the, and you must go closer to the closest possible enemy unit. You can go within engagement range. So essentially, if you manage to get that unit of Wolfen inside your opponent's army and tag something, unless they can fall back more than eight inches, essentially. They need to be falling back more than 8 inches so they can get outside a possible blood surge of 6 to be within. But this is an auto 6 move and then a D6 surge. So essentially, against a gun line, they'll get to shoot you with 1 unit before you surge back into combat and can't be shot further. And then it's going into your turn. So you kill that unit you surged into, and then you just got another full activation inside their army.
That's
very spicy. Very spicy. It'll take a bit, you know, if you know this is coming, you can stop this, which is why I'm telling people about it, because it's a very easy thing to stop, but it will gotcha you in a very horrible way, where, you know, in the early days of a new codex.
Got to get the knowledge out there. Well, seriously, everybody, don't forget to hit that like, share, and subscribe. We'll be back next week. We do have some other stuff happening later on in the month. We'll be telling you about that next week. Plenty more stuff coming. You don't want to miss it. We'll see y'all soon, everybody.
Boy.
Bye.
Warspec scan is clear. I think they're gone for now.